In the 19th century, the German Bible scholar Albrecht Alt divided all laws in the Bible into two kinds. He called them apodictic and casuistic, but we don't have to worry about the names, because part of scholarship, of course, is finding difficult names for everyday things. Otherwise, there are no PhD theses and no impressed non-scholars. The truth is that we all know the distinctions that Alt was making, and we use them in everyday life. He said that there are statements in the Bible that are absolute, that is, apodictic, and conditional, casuistic. So, for example, some mitzvot have qualifiers. If you do this in this way, then this will happen. Some of them have rewards. If you honor your parents, it says in the Ten Commandments, then you will live long on the land. Others, said Alt, are absolutes. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not murder. And those, he said, are different kinds of laws. And he tried to figure out why the Bible sometimes gave conditional laws and sometimes gave absolute laws. We all know that distinction, but here is the problem. We tend to see human things as absolute when they're really conditional. People get married. They say, we will love one another forever. It's unconditional. It's absolute. But then they discover that marriage is hard, that it requires work and time, that it's conditional, that you can't say, let's be married and then be done. And that what seemed at first like an absolute was in fact dependent on constant, unremitting effort and time and work. The same thing is true with talent, with learning, with the regard of others. They can flourish, they can dissolve their conditional gifts. We see them as absolutes, but they're not. And we deceive ourselves and undo ourselves when we treat things as certain that are not certain. The writer Virginia Woolf said, we lose our friends through an inability to cross the street. Figure. Person is my friend. I don't have to write, I don't have to call, I don't have to walk across the street, and years go by and the friendship is gone. Human relationships are conditional and rarely absolute. The same is true of life. We live as though life is absolute, as though it can't, in fact, disappear. Although we know it intellectually, it doesn't penetrate, it doesn't seep into our souls. Sartre has a short story called The Wall about a man who's going to be executed in the morning, and he's thinking over his life, and he realizes as he faces the executioner, I lived as if I had forever. I worried about trivial things. I spent my time on stuff that didn't matter. I saw life as an absolute, and in fact, it's ephemeral, it's passing, it's temporal, it's conditional. Tomorrow it will be gone. Everybody knows that feeling who wakes up one morning and something's not right. And you call the doctor and you get the test and all of a sudden the world shudders and there is a darkness in the middle of the day and you realize that life is conditional. And you had always been deceived into thinking it was absolute. To live fully, to live decently, to live with one's eyes open is to live with the awareness that we don't live in a world of absolutes. That things pass away, and tomorrow they are gone. That's the point of the very beginning of the Torah reading this morning. Ekev Tishmarun, it says, if you listen. And the negative is implied. If you don't listen, then all these things will not happen. And God goes on then to promise the land of Israel to the Jewish people. But the land of Israel is a conditional gift. How quickly it seems as though it would be there forever, when in fact, for so much of our history, it was gone. Just last week, we were reading the book of Echa, of Lamentations. How does the city sit solitary like a widow about a Jerusalem that was devastated and abandoned? And it has been lost, not once in our history, but again and again. And when we open the paper and when we see the news, we have to remember that there is an underlying truth that is more powerful than the events of the day, which is that the land of Israel could disappear. That the promise is a conditional promise. That it was reclaimed and will only be sustained by human effort. Lo sumchim al nes, says the Talmud. We are not allowed to rely on miracles. There are some people who understand the conditionality of that promise. They understand it because they live it. I talked last week and last night about the camp of Ethiopian children, new immigrants to Israel, who have been there for a month, who don't speak the language, who are promised a brand new land, and they come, and where do they land? In Haifa. And after coming on the wings of eagles to the promised land of Israel, rockets fall out of the sky, and their parents send them away. So they are alone in a camp, without their parents, without their language, without their land. Worrying, wondering, hoping that the bombs will stop falling so they can be reunited. They understand that the promise is conditional. When we visited soldiers in the hospital, it reminded me very forcefully again and again that there is no creature on God's earth that believes in the absoluteness of the promise of life more than a 19-year-old boy. When you are 19, you are invincible. And here they were, lying in bed, wondering if they would walk again, if they would speak again, if that absolute promise had turned so conditional that their life, so soon begun, was already over. We need to help them, and we have been helping them, in part because we appreciate the reality that the land of Israel ought not depend only on that small group of people in Israel who believe in it, who fight for it and who sustain it, but on us as well. And we do that in part because we know who we are and what we believe, and also we know who those people are who would steal away and destroy what we believe. You know, Judaism doesn't really have saints. It has tzaddikim. A tzaddik is a righteous person. And the difference is that a saint is known for the perfection of self, but a tzaddik is devoted to the perfection of the world. A tzaddik can be a flawed person. You can have an irascible tzaddik, an annoying tzaddik, a touchy tzaddik. as long as they work righteousness in the world. Because ultimately, it's that legacy that will perpetuate itself day after day and year after year. And that's why, with all of our imperfections, with all of us here who are not saints, we can still aspire to be tzaddikim. We can still make a difference by seeking righteousness in this world, by knowing that this world needs to heal, and understanding who it is that works against the healing of this world. You know, that line that was passed around the internet again and again is poignant and powerful and ought to be remembered. Which is, if all the weapons tomorrow were taken from the Arab enemies of Israel, there would be peace. If all the weapons were taken from the hands of Jews, there would be no more Israel. We have to realize that there is an imbalance in the aspirations of the two sides. We fight people, as we saw in the events of this week in Britain, who have not territorial ambitions, but homicidal ambitions. Who seek not to live with us in peace, but to destroy us in war. And that reality, as painful as it is to admit, as jarring as it is to say in a synagogue on a Saturday morning, it cannot be forgotten. Not because we wish it so, but because it is so. And in order to work righteousness in this world, we have to realize that everything can disappear, and to live in a bubble of denial is to leave our people and our nation defenseless. When you travel the land of Israel, which takes a couple hours, you realize that this is a country that has nothing. Their natural resources are minuscule. It's the one place in the Middle East that has no oil. Moses wanders for 40 years to find that sliver of land that has no oil. I'll tell you what we have. We have salt. The Dead Sea, we could spice all the tables of France. That we could do. But nothing else. It's half desert. And all, to us at least, holy, but not because of its natural resources, but because it is saturated with our history, with our dreams, with our tears, with our songs. Because that wall speaks to us. And that's why when people put notes in it, we speak back. As we approached the wall on our trip to Israel, I quoted the Hebrew song, Yesh Anashim Im Lev Shel Aven V'Avanim Im Lev Adam. There are people who have a heart of stone, and there are stones that have hearts of flesh. That's all we have. We have resources of character and of intellect and of history and of aspiration, but that's all we have. And that's what we seek to protect. And we know that it is a conditional gift. That it's not even 60 years in our hands. That it was not long ago that the world didn't have an Israel and almost didn't have a Jewish people. That's why we fight. That's why the soldier in Rambam Hospital who had lost his leg told the visiting group, "The one thing I regret is I can't go back to my company. I left them alone." Because he knows what he's fighting for. He's under no illusions anymore. He's not only fighting for himself and that small band. He's fighting for an existential reason. For the survival of a land and of an ideal that some people in the world, for whatever unimaginable reason, would seek to destroy. Our tradition knows from conditions and from absolutes. There is an absolute. Ubachata bechayim. You should choose life. And how ironic and painful it is that choosing life sometimes means that you have to give life up. We continue to raise money, to ask, to volunteer, to speak out. And it's not because this is how we would choose to spend our time or live our lives. It would be a wonderful and blissful thing for the Jewish people to be a little bit less enmeshed in history. But it does not for now seem to be our fate. And so, we ask again that people give, that they send clothes, shoes, food, money, that they visit, that they let the people of Israel know that we understand that we hold a precious gift that can slip through our fingers. That we remember what the world was like before it granted the Jewish people this tiny sliver of land in which to build a democracy and a free society in a part of the world that has not yet, sad to say, caught up to the ideals of freedom. We remember, and we do not take our gift for granted. Just yesterday, I received an email from our members Nancy and Bernie Kapler, who are over in Israel in an army base, volunteering again, which they have done before. And they are in Sderot. You remember I've spoken about Sderot. We went and we met with the mayor when we were in Israel, and he told us how 3,500 Qassam rockets have fallen in that city in the past 5 years. We walked the streets and saw the potholes made not by cars, but by rockets. He told us how the rockets are launched each morning as the children go to school to terrorize them and their parents. And this is what Nancy wrote. Our madricha, that is, the leader of our group, the one who tells us what bags to fill and packages to wrap, comes from Sderot. Her whole family lives there. Her very best friend was killed 1 year ago by a Qassam rocket. She said 2,000 people came to her friend Ella Abukasis's funeral because this girl was one of the most talented, smart, beautiful, and beloved girls in Sderot. Her story was written up in all the newspapers. She threw herself on top of her 12-year-old brother and saved him, but she was killed. The Talmud says that when a person enters the room, in front of that person, there are angels who cry out, "Make way for an image of God." I hope and I pray that when Ella Abakasis came before God, there was a parade of angels. And I hope and I pray that when God saw her, God was ashamed, as we should be, and filled with sorrow, and overflowing with pain, and the knowledge that this does not have to be, that hate and cruelty and indifference are what killed Ella Abakasis. And that those angels are crying out for us as well. We cannot turn the world around in a morning, or in a day, or perhaps in a year. But we can break through a little bit of the shell of our indifference and remember that compared to the sacrifice of people who live every day, year after year, in the grip of terror, we ask of ourselves very little. We know, says the prophet, Ma tov u'ma Hashem doresh mimcha, what is good and what God demands of you. To do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God. I pray in the weeks and months and years ahead that we will remember those who have been hurt, who've been wounded, whose minds and hearts are scarred, whose young lives have been stolen. And that in remembering, we will do what we can to aspire to righteousness, not just to live well, but to care more, to give more, to understand that those angels that cry out for Ella Abakasis, they cry out for us too. It is my prayer to God that we be worthy of them. Amen.